This episode of WDW Today is brought to you, as always, by Off to Neverland Travel. And they're a great travel agency, and they're really fun, and they're nice people. And you've heard Kyle on the show before, and you really need to try them out. Go to neverland.com is their website. You need to check in with Kyle, check in with the whole group there. They are a vacation planning organization that's going to blow your mind. They're going to give you that package that you've always wanted, that vacation you've always dreamed of. That was something that Kyle kind of drove home for us, is they set the expectation so you know what you're going to get. They'll help you plan your dining reservations. They'll work on anything you'd like, and they'll help you plan perfect itineraries and perfect trips for on-property resorts, and maybe they do off-property as well. I believe they do. And as Will Haynes likes to say,
all you got to do is pack.
That's right. All you got to do is pack, and remember, use GoToNeverland.com as the URL, because that tells them you heard about it right here on WDW Today. And they also have those De Las Puertas WDW Today weekend packages on sale now.
Give me a little intro there, Gomer.
Bringing the world to your world. This is WDW Today, coming to you from somewhere off property at the Laffo Graham Studios, featuring Len Testa and the greatest band in podcasting, Off Kilter. Now here they are, Terry Weaver, the nature boy Will Haynes, and your host, Logan Seculo.
It's Wednesday, March 2nd, 2016. This is episode 1501 of WDW Today. I'm Logan Seculo.
I'm Will Haynes.
I'm Terry Weaver.
And who's joining us today for the majority of the show?
Len Testa.
Mr. Len Testa, of course. Original member, OG member of the cast is joining us for today's discussion. As you expect, we're going to talk tickets today. We're going to talk a little bit. Hopefully, Lynn can break it down for us. For us that have read plenty of the blogs and pretty much all that needs to be read and decided, like me, maybe to just go ahead and buy a annual pass just so I don't even have to think about it. Lynn, tell us what's going on. Obviously, everyone knows variable pricing is here, but what does that actually mean?
So, a couple of things. Disney's divided the calendar into seasons. One of the seasons is called value season, sort of like they do for resorts.
Yeah.
And that's typically the lowest price tickets for the year. And that's actually the standard price now for one-day Magic Kingdom tickets. $105 plus tax for adults, $99 for kids. So that price hasn't changed. If you go
– and that seems to be like September, right? Like that's the only value pretty much.
We'll get into this, but it turns out that most value days are either during the cold weather or during peak Atlantic hurricane season. That's probably a coincidence.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Yeah. The next tier is called regular, and it is slightly more expensive, about $5 a day plus tax. And then there's peak season, which is pretty much anytime your kids are out of school. And that's it's much more expensive. It's $19 more expensive for adults and for kids plus tax. So that one-day ticket to the Magic Kingdom is going to cost you $124 plus tax, roughly $132 if you've with tax. It's a big thing to note, though, right now for today, it only applies to one-day theme park tickets. And as usual, Epcot, the studios, and Animal Kingdom cost slightly less. I think $8 or so less.
Was there any change to the multi-day? I know they kind of swept under the rug some stuff, though.
So this is the thing that isn't getting a lot of press because of the tiering. But the multi-day tickets price increases, adjusted for inflation, are the largest price increases in at least 25 years.
Yeah, that's pretty intense. So what are we looking at, the difference between now if you're buying a multi-day? Because, like, I mean, a lot of us, I can tell you that my family, especially when we lived in Orlando a lot, it was all, because we didn't go, like, annual pass style that often, it was all walk up, buy a one-day ticket to Magic Kingdom at the ticket counter. So I get that, like, look, a lot of people are complaining, like, who does that? A lot of people, I think, especially locals and people that are within driving distance do that, because you just go for the day, like, oh, I'll go buy it. So I'm sure this is to not necessarily their favorite things in the world, but what here happened? Like, what was the change between a multi-day ticket?
So multi-day tickets, the average increase was about 8.5%, but some tickets went up more than that. Some tickets went up 11%. So, to put that in perspective, your 4, 5, 6-day, 7-day tickets went up about $30-$35 each for a family of four on a 4-day between the adults and the kids. It's $100 more for a trip now.
Are you guys looking at touring plans? Do you think that the crowd calendar and these kind of things will actually adjust due to this price inflation, or do you think this is a not really going to change anything? Because look, to me, if it's $25 more for me to not be in the, you know, hell week of Christmas and New Year's, I get that a little bit, because it's like, look, I've gone on New Year's Eve and it's miserable. It's, I don't even know how anyone really fully enjoys it. So do you think it's going to do anything to that, or is this just going to be, well, no, just people are going to pay $25 more?
I don't think it's going to do anything for crowd control. And it's, you know, to say that this is for crowd control neglects the fact that only 8% of the people who buy tickets buy one day tickets, right? So right off the top, you're talking about 1 in 12 people that this variable pricing affects. And even then, of those 1 in 12 people, half of them are going to say, well, you know what, for $5 more, I'm not going to take my kid out of school. Or $10 more, I'm not going to take my kid out of school.
Yeah, right? I feel like for it to be a legitimate crowd control feature, you're going to have to raise it like $50 a ticket.
Exactly. Something
significant that you're going to feel a little bit more than
yeah, because it would be what, there. For a family of four, you're talking about an extra $100, which when planning your vacation doesn't go very far to begin with. So, you know, that's, you know, minimizing one meal, you know, essentially Disney World. So
yeah, assuming everyone's adults. Yeah, it's an extra $100. But here's the funny thing. If you look at how much gas prices have gone down over the last 2 or 3 years, for the average family who's driving 500 or 600 miles to Walt Disney World, the cost, their savings in gas is essentially what Disney upcharged you on your tickets.
Yeah, so it all evens out.
Well, the beauty of that, though, is when gas prices go up and your entire vacation costs more, people are going to blame the gas companies, not Disney. It's genius. It's Fred and I were looking at this today. We're trying to figure out, like, you know, because essentially your vacation costs the same. You know, if it's $2,000 or, you know, $2,500, no matter how the internal parts are divvied up, it's just that Disney gets more and, you know, Exxon gets a little bit less. But when Exxon eventually has to raise their prices, they're going to get all the blame for your vacation costs going up.
It's pretty interesting. I do think that's a fun way to look at it in some ways. At least it keeps it entertaining to be like, well, let's.
The best part of this show now to me is economic analysis
exactly.
with Lynn.
Yeah.
That's what we're changing the listener questions to, is actually going
to
be.
I was about to
Econ
ask,
101 with Lynn.
Is there a China economy tie into this theory?
No, but there's a Saudi Arabian economy because the oil price.
Of course. Yeah.
Hello, fracking. So the other thing we're looking at, though, do you guys know what Stein's law is? Herbert Stein?
Sure, Will, you know, right? No.
All right. So he's an economist, and one of his famous sayings is, "If a trend is unsustainable, it won't be sustained." So like things that you can't continue won't, mm-hmm. right? So I went back to 2005 and I looked at how much a Disney vacation for a family of four has increased in price since 2005 every year versus U.S. household income gains for the bottom 20% of Americans, the middle 20% of Americans, and the top 20% of Americans.
This is why this gets to be your day job. This is why, because you have the time to do this. But go ahead.
It's I'm working on it for the book. But here's the thing. So say a four-day trip, staying at Caribbean Beach, family of four, two adults, two kids, excluding transportation costs. A trip now costs right around $3,850 for 4 days.
Yeah, so however you cut it, yeah.
$1,000 a day, no matter. Back in 2005, it was $2,500. It's gone up essentially 85% in 10 years. Americans' incomes, if you were in the bottom 20% of households, your income has gone up 10%.
Okay.
If you're in the middle quartile, it's 20%, and if you happen to be in the top 1/5 of American households making over $100,000 or more, your income has gone up about 25%. So nowhere near the 85% increase of Disney vacations. In fact, it's even the top 5% of Americans, their pay rate isn't keeping up with a Disney vacation. It really is like somewhere between the top 1/10 and the top 1% of Americans.
And yet the Chinese economy now has more billionaires than the American economy. Fact. And so the parks stay slammed.
Yeah. I mean, it's 20% of visitors are international. Now, granted, a lot of that is Canadian and UK, and Canada's dollar's not doing well. So, but still, yeah.
So would, by that economic analysis, would you think that perhaps 10 years ago the vacation was priced below the market value?
You know, back then, the cost of a Disney vacation was keeping up with both U.S. household income gains and inflation. In fact, if you go back all the way to 1990, there were years in which the inflation-adjusted cost of a Disney vacation actually went down slightly. So the biggest increase prior to this, prior to 2016's increase, was 1998 when Disney opened the Animal Kingdom. But if you adjust it for inflation, it was a much more modest increase because back then, you know, in the late 90s, everyone was making money hand over fist. Inflation was like 3 or 4%. Now it's like, you know, if inflation is 2%, people are like, woo, craziness.
Do you see trip planning changing significantly? I know you said that you don't expect people to not put their kids out of school, but for you guys, for what you do for your living, for touring plans, do you see much changing when it comes to even planning people's traditional vacation? Are we just going to see more of the same? Because theme parks doing variable pricing is not brand new in this world. This is something that's going on outside of Disney World, especially in the lower tier parks, whether it's Six Flags, something like that. Often weekends, usually higher, those kind of things.
Yeah, and you've seen it for things like the front of the line systems, like at our Express Pass at Universal.
Yeah,
right. Variable pricing for that.
Sometimes that can kill you.
But sometimes it's cheaper to just stay in the Universal Hotel, even if you're not going to stay there, right?
I've definitely done that before.
You know, right now it doesn't. I think what you might see is when Disney goes, and we think they're going to do it next year, when they go to variable pricing for multi-day tickets.
Yeah, this is just testing the waters.
Yeah, this is step one, right? But when they do that next year. In fact, I envision a system where it's like the stock market, where literally the price that you want to pay, that you have to pay to get in, depends on how many people are in the park that day, you know, like Bob Iger's boat payment and whatever, you know, whatever else has to happen for the company that day, where the number just changes constantly. I think it's like that. Yeah.
And if you talk about them testing the waters, they sort of did this with annual passes back in October, where the annual passes really spread out in the offerings and the, you know, the different tiers and sort of
gonna help.
You know, you're sort of experiencing those kind of things. I think the one thing that, you know, you compare the 2005, you know, back in 2005, they were literally giving away those packages. No one was actually paying $2,500. You were getting free dining. You were getting, you know, upgraded. Yeah. You were getting an extra day for free. I mean, they were literally, I think that's the biggest difference in the expense. It's been that kind of hidden thing that has all kind of disappeared. I mean, if you look at the dining promotion this year, it's a lot different than, you know, it's a free counter service.
And that's the thing that people don't realize, that food costs have gone up almost as much as ticket costs over the last 20 years.
Yeah, you're not analyzing that.
But no one looks at it, right? No one plans for the cost of food until they get there.
No one's bringing in a full Thanksgiving dinner like you are.
Steve Bloom. It's a genius photo, man.
I think this is all interesting to me. What I started thinking about this morning, and what's interesting to me about it is the price of entertainment in general has gone up so much in the last 10 years, where, not to say, I mean, I bought today a mid-level, you know, I think it was the lower bowl, but not like a close seat to WWE Raw, and it cost me over $100 a ticket. And that kind of shows me, it's like, well, if you look at like that, like a price per hour, per entertainment hour, I'm going to get about 4 hours out of that event. How long do people average stay in Walt Disney World? Is that something that you analyze?
8 to 10 hours.
8 to 10 hours.
10.
So about 10. Double that. So part of me goes, not to play devil's advocate at all, because I do think the variable pricing thing, I knew it was coming. It felt like it was coming. It doesn't really affect too much me, and I'm not going to like be the one person like sitting here like gloating. But obviously, I bought an annual pass. It's part of our job here. So to me personally, it doesn't affect a giant amount. And like you said, $25 on a single day ticket, not something that, again, I'm not buying a single day ticket. That's not where I am. But for the normal family, so if I look at that, a single event to a single family, that's an interesting comparison to me. It cost me $40 to take my son to see, you know, Monster Jam. And you know, is that any bit of it? And maybe it's not at all. The fact that entertainment prices for a family, for family events, is just on the rise. I mean, I paid somewhere around that for Disney on Ice, $40, $50, $60 for a decent seat, you know.
It's true. And that's the thing that I think that is left out a lot of this discussion. One of the great things about a Disney vacation is that you can show up, do absolutely no planning, and have a great time. And so really what you're paying for is the fact that Disney has laid out a smorgasbord of entertainment for you that you can just pick and choose. Whereas if you went to New York City, or you went to Washington, D.C., or you went to any other city, you land there, and then it's up to you, the parents, to figure out exactly what you're going to do to entertain your kids for the next week.
Yeah, and I think that's a huge plus. I'm not
somebody, huge. Yeah, yeah.
That's just, it's a giant part of the equation. The reason I'm going next week is I know I mapped out our days, I made all our arrangements, and everything's just handled. You know, it's just done. And to me, it's worth paying a little bit of a premium for that. But I do think this jump, the giant jump, I don't think we'll ever see. I don't think, have we ever seen, we never seen a price decrease. We ever even seen a price stay the same for tickets?
Disneyland, I think a couple of tickets went down.
Went down.
And actually in World, there were a couple of like one day park hopper add-ons last year that went down in price a little bit. So every once in a while, you know, in the grid that is the ticket matrix, one or two things will go down or stay the same.
But in general, it's always going to be up on the rise. Just these giant jumps and how, you know, when the next giant jump will happen again. And I think we're probably safe for a little bit. But, you know, I think that's...
it's adorable.
I know. But
you're so cute when you're like that.
Well, you think it'll be another 8% jump next year? You think we'll see that kind of big jump every year from now on? I mean, I feel like will it now revert back to the smaller percentage, you know, 1.5%, 2%, 3% increases over the year?
Historically, they're averaging around, I think, 4%, maybe a little less, adjusted for inflation over time. You know, I think if you plan for 5 to 7, you're never going to be too surprised.
And that percentage, as this dollar figure grows, seems like a bigger jump because it's going to be a larger dollar number equal that percentage.
Yeah, I mean, I was going back to 1990, and you know, there were years in which Disney raised the adult ticket prices 50 cents.
That's okay. Crazy. Yeah, and I think it'll definitely change the way locals go. It'll change the way a lot of people went when I was a kid, where it was walk up to a ticket booth, buy a one-day ticket to the Magic Kingdom, go in and enjoy your day. And I think that's what it changes. Majority, for most of our audience that's planning these big Walt Disney World vacations, you're going to see a small to moderate change. Nothing that's going to blow your mind, but who knows? That's probably on the rise. So get your tickets now. Make your plans now when you can.
I mean, I think if there's no secret in the Disney community that the company has been serious about getting you to do as much as you can on property and spend as much money as you can when you're there. So, you know, they built a ton of properties, so they want you to stay on property. They really don't want you to come buy a one-day ticket. They want you to come and buy a 4-day hopper and eat and stay in the resort and
go to the new,
and now stay at, you know, go Springs. To Disney Springs, and don't go to the Outlet Mall, go to Disney Springs. So they're very much wanting you to keep as many of your dollars on property,
which makes total sense. From a business point of view, you can't really disagree with it, but it is something you guys all have to account for, look into, and make sure you keep yourself in mind, especially when you start, if you're doing savings accounts that are years in advance before you make your travel arrangements, you know, be cognizant of how things move and how things change. And this is probably, would you consider this the single biggest change in the ticketing system since really, I mean, in the modern age?
Since Magic Your Way. So in the last decade, definitely tiered pricing is the big jump, yeah.
Magic Your Way still confuses me, too. Oh, Lord, I'm bad.
It was a huge shift. And then, you know, back in the day, Disney used to, you know, every year or two, they would tinker with the benefits of their multi-day tickets, but nothing like we've seen over the last 10 years.
So this doesn't affect any of us at the table today, but I know that there's water parks also have sort of a two-tier system. Is that what I understand?
Right. Yeah. So it's a same sort of thing, like a value day and then a regular day, right? I'm really surprised on that they didn't do weekday pricing different from weekend pricing, because weekdays are the busiest for the...
That's what I was anticipating for everything, really. I was anticipating a jump up most weekends, excluding maybe Christmas, where it's going to be maxed out every week or every day. Yeah. I was expecting, because that's what I think, you know, Six Flags, some of these other resorts that do it, that's what it's like. Or even Universal, if you go to Halloween Horror Nights Sunday through Thursday, it's different pricing if you go Friday through Sunday. And I was expecting something more like that. So this one is interesting. Lynn and the Touring Plans gang have posted a lot of stuff about it. You should check it out, especially even the updated, essentially, calendar that says, here's where everything lies, here's what it looks like, all color-coded and nice for you. And that's all over at Touring Plans. Well, Lynn, is there anything else for our audience before we bring you back on in just a little bit for listener questions? Is there anything else when it comes to this new, you know, development? Is there anything else they need to keep themselves, you know, in check over?
I think if you're parents with school age kids, there is a period at the end of August that's value pricing. It's the one set of value pricing available to you while your kids are typically out of school. The one thing you really have to worry about, and I wasn't joking when I said this earlier, is that it is in the middle of peak hurricane season in the Atlantic.
Oh, no, it can be horrible.
Yeah, August, so it's third week of August through Labor Day. It's traditionally one of the busiest times for hurricane season, but that is the cheapest time to go to. Yeah,
mega
also
hot.
Also hot. But
I got a lot of sun poisoning during that.
But you know, if you're gonna be in Florida, you want to go for a day. It is a way of saving, you know, a few extra dollars. Cool. So,
all right, thanks, Lynn. We'll have you back on just in a minute for listener questions with Lynn. The ticket increases weren't the only news over the week. So this is one that just broke on Monday, and this is of course that Disney Springs has long rumored expanding to these a lot of new retailers. And they've announced what they are. They'll be located in sort of a town center, which you can look at the, if you look at the, you know, the artist renderings, look very much like sort of a open mall, kind of like, honestly, kind of like one of the Premier Outlets is kind of what it looks like if you look at it. Just maybe nicer done. It's covered, though, so it'll be nice, hopefully cool, great places to shop with. A lot of stores you're probably familiar with, and we'll go through the list quickly and see if anyone has any comments on those specifically, but Terry, what do you like about this? How do you feel about this? How do you feel about them really going away from? Because Disney World's version of Downtown Disney was very much there was a handful of stores that were kind of not Disney, but they all were a little special. Whether that was the Ghirardelli chocolate, or whether that was any others, a Lego, some of those other places that had sort of specialty things. But these are a lot of stores you can get at any mall.
Well, I think what I'm most excited about this expansion is for there are a lot of folks that come to Disney who only use Magical Express, so they're not able to leave property. And if you live in, you know, small town Kansas, you probably don't have an Anthropologie, which is one of the stores that's coming to Disney Springs, which, you know, as a husband of a wife that enjoys shopping, you know, you already go to Disney World and leave a good bit of money behind to the mouse.
Just
and now
wait.
It seems like Kate Spade and Anthropologie are going to be picking up a good fair share of that revenue too.
Yeah, I think it's a little interesting, some of the stores we see on here, even just kind of the moderate scale luxury brands like Lacoste and Kate Spade. There's an Under Armour store coming, but one that actually is kind of interesting to me is the Coca-Cola store, just because it kind of seems a little bizarre. You know, like, you think of two of the biggest brands in the world are Coca-Cola and Walt Disney. So if you have the Disney stores competing with another brand store, that's not, it's not necessarily, I mean, I guess you'll have t-shirts and things like that,
but there's also going to be
bizarre.
Some sort of a Coke experience. The world of Coke.
The World of Coke is coming as well, but that's also been kind of, are they building it yet? I don't even, or is it,
yes.
Or is it where
it's part of the whole expansion?
Yes,
I think
I was
happening
thinking
here.
Of NBA has kind of gone stagnant.
NBA,
which was going to replace Disney Quest, has seemed to have slowed down. Doesn't seem to be happening now. So Disney Quest, the eternal attraction that never closes, that they always tell
and
you
never
is going to
close, updated.
Never gets updated. I haven't been in years. I want to go soon before it closes down. Lots of interesting stores, you know, to just rattle them off. I think we can do that really quick. Like they said already, Anthropologie and Lacoste. Again, it is to me the only thing that's odd is you're right. These are sort of luxury brands. You can't go out there spending less than $100. I mean, I think it'd be tough.
Yeah, even a polo shirt at Lacoste is $100.
Right. So I'm questioning who they're appealing to. Is it the tourist? Is it some locals? Is it the people that go to the outlet malls? That's what I kind of feel like. Are they trying to keep you so much on property that they're even trying to take the shopping experiences that happen off property and bring them on
property?
I think that's what it is. And I see more, personally, as someone who could be a little objective in this, it's going to be cool to see those stores there. I see more appeal in going out and going to those outlet malls. You get better deals. You know, I see these list of stores, and it doesn't necessarily jump out at me as something that I'm excited to go to Downtown Disney because I want Disney stuff. But to go there, see Anthropologie and see Lacoste, cool. It's also Kate Spade, Sephora, Under Armour, MAC Cosmetics, Vince Camuto. Is that how you say that? We're going to go with that. Vera Bradley, Lucky Brand, Oakley, Coke Store, as well said. The Trophy Room, which was founded by Marcus Jordan, the NBA legend, Michael Jordan's son, who I believe played for UCF. I could be wrong about that, but I think he did. Alex and Annie, which is eco-conscious jewelry. Hawaiian's first jeweler since 1924, Nahuku. Shore, American Threads, Volcom, Kipling's, Francesca's, Melissa's Shoes, Uno de 50, Johnson & Murphy.
Get your dress shoes while you're at Disney.
Ernst & Young. No. Everything But Water. No.
So I think that's a swimsuit store.
It is. Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Totally makes sense. I get that with Free People, which is kind of Anthropologie light. Johnny was Columbia.
Get a coat.
I like a lot of the Columbia wear. Sperry and Luxury of Time by Diamonds International, which is an industry leader of fine timepieces and jewelry in the Caribbean, Alaska, Mexico. So a lot more coming, but that's interesting. I'm kind of mixed on this entire thing.
You know, I don't think this is going to happen, but if it did, I might be a little excited. If the Lacoste store has a polo where the crocodile has like Mickey ears on, totally buying
done.
That. Yeah, done deal. I doubt they'll do it, but you never know.
Now here's what, that's a good point. If these stores embrace the fact that they're at Disney and they've done some sort of licensing deal to where they can provide unique exclusive items, I'm more up for them being there. I think Vera Bradley already has exclusive stuff. Some of these companies already do for Disney. I'd love to see, I mean, Anthropologie and Lacoste or any of these take on the Disney brand and see what they can come up with, because they've got some cool designers, and that does, maybe that brings me back around a little bit. I'd like to talk to my wife, who's a big fan of these stores, see what she thinks about this, because I do think she enjoyed the shopping experience of leaving property, and now it's adding more stress to Disney Springs, which could sometimes be, especially getting there, an incredibly stressful occasion. Now, not to say that parking at the outlet malls are any better. Stuff starts opening there soon. I mean, like May 15th, they said stores start opening. Who knows how long that's going to take, but I expect pretty soon, because I don't think they're going to, I mean, if it already looks like a rundown mall by the time it's open, everyone has that local mall you go to that's just like the burnout mall that like four stores are in and some toy store that never hasn't sold a toy in 20 years and is a front for something horrible. That's, I don't want it to look like that. So hopefully these stores start opening up altogether. I think that's a smarter move. I'm sure it'll be beautiful. I'm sure it'll be very nice. But if I'm looking at these renderings, it looks very much like they looked at the outlet malls and saw what they could do better.
Yep.
And that's great. But I always encourage people to get off property. And I think that's one of my big things is we are a rental car family. I understand it's more money. Some people can't do it. Or an Uber family where you get out and see what else is going on in the world. Because there is so much in Orlando that ties in. I mean, heck, even the Disney outlet that's at the Premier Outlets, you know, the mm-hmm. Disney character or something. I don't know what it's called. Disney character.
Character warehouse.
Character warehouse. Yes. I get crazy deals in there.
Oh, yeah.
So make sure to check that out. But it's good. I'm excited, I guess.
Even as we introduce this segment, I'm reading this press release here from Disney. And it says now that there's going to be a total of 150 retail dining entertainment offerings at Disney Springs, you know, which is pretty exciting considering you used to go to Disney Springs and I went to the World of Disney, Earl of Sandwich, and the Toy Store, and we were out of there. So there's going to be a lot more to do.
Yeah, to me it was, I'm trying to think what my go-tos were. World of Disney, the Art World, the Art of Disney.
Yeah, Art of
but
Disney,
now they have Wonderground, sure. Right? Do they have Wonderground?
They have the Art of Disney, and then the Wonderground is like a corner of the market section. Co-op.
Oh, I haven't been to it. And then we'd go to the Christmas store, and typically we'd eat at the least popular places, like the Rainforest or the T-Rex. Or Fulton's, actually. Fulton's, if it was just my wife and I, we go to Fulton's. Really liked Fulton's, even though I know they're going through a redo and some people don't love it. Love Fulton's. But, I'm excited to see things change and expand. I don't want to be like the Debbie Downer that says I'm upset about that. They also are adding a Bibbidi Bobbidi Boutique, so that'll be nice for all the little kiddos. Another space. Heck, the fact that you can go to that without buying a park ticket is actually kind of cool. So it's another experience. I always encourage people to go over to Fort Wilderness because you can do so much without spending any money. This is another one. You'll have Bibbidi Bobbidi Boutique, which obviously you have to spend money.
Which is the opposite of not spending
money. But you don't have to spend 100-ish money. Whatever dollar fee is that day. Now I can't even say it. 100-ish money to go to the theme park to get that done. So even if you're local, bring your kids down there. It's a great thing. Well, we'll be right back with your favorite segment of mine. Listener questions.
With Lynn. It's getting dark. It's getting late. And I'm a little bit restless.
Hate to break up all the fun. I want to tell you a little bit about Capturing the Magic. You've heard this ad read all month. We've been talking about our friends at Capturing the Magic. This is their last ad read, and I want to make sure that I got this message across. They've been great people to work with. You really want to check out this book. I love it. I go through it probably once a week at least with my son. It's a lot of fun. It's a visual journey that kind of changes the way you see Walt Disney World. It's beautiful, and all the creators are Disney fans, but they're also really talented. It's an artful tour of all the parks, hundreds of photographs, wealth of knowledge, these little like blurb paragraphs about each attraction. It's a magnificent coffee table sized book that brings the magic of Walt Disney World right home. I think you guys are going to like it. Like I told you guys before, a dollar from each book goes to Make-A-Wish Foundation. So not only do you get a great product, but you also are doing good for families that want to go to Walt Disney World or have any amazing wishes that they can provide through Make-A-Wish. So their website is capturing-the-magic.com. capturing-magic.com, or you can search for Capturing the Magic on Amazon, and we also have it linked on our website. Again, Capturing the Magic, A Visual Journey Through Walt Disney World. It's a new book. Take a look at it. Last but not least, a shout out to our friends at Kingdom Strollers. If you're going to Walt Disney World, you have kids, trust me, you're going to want to do it. Stroller rental, they come and bring it to you. They take it from you. No messing around in the airports. No messing around traveling with them. Great deals. The prices are awesome. Check them out. KingdomStrollers.com. Again, a great resource for the parents and the grandparents traveling. Rest your feet. Wait on. Bring the strollers. KingdomStrollers.com.
It's time for listener questions with Lynn.
Well, that little jingle can mean only one thing, and that is that we're back with Lynn Testa, the godfather of question and answer. That's what they call him. That's I've seen that. Lynn, welcome back to the broadcast.
Thanks for having me on.
I'm pretty sure I said broadcast, but you know what? Whatever. Move along. All right, first question. Who wants to, who's a good reader among the group?
I can read this
one.
Will.
Yeah.
I'm going to do this in a very dramatic, prosaic style. Email. Heather from Pine Knoll Shores, North Carolina. Hi, guys. I just love your podcast. I'm not a super long-time listener, but I am a dedicated listener now. I'm planning a trip for my family, me, husband, and twin, almost 5 years old. In January of 2017. Logan, I give you major credit traveling to WDW with 3 Under 3. We didn't go anywhere, and I mean anywhere, with our twins until they were almost a year. And even then, we would only take trips to the grocery store as, quote, field trips. It was insane. But I digress.
I feel you.
I've heard rumors that ticket prices for Walt Disney World are probably going up soon, and I was hoping to take advantage of the ticket prices now. I have a feeling this has been asked before, but if I buy tickets now from a third-party seller, undercover tourist, or etc., will they work in January 2017 after the price increases? Also, we've decided if we're not going to do park hoppers yet or nailed down the exact number of days we want to be in the parks. If I bought a 5-day Magic Your Way ticket now from a discount reseller, could I upgrade to a park hopper for water parks and more, or add a day or any combination of those when we get to Walt Disney World? We're planning on renting points at Animal Kingdom Jambo House for a 1-bedroom. So a package won't be an option for us. Thank you. Love your show. Heather.
Very nice.
Thank you for listening to NPR. That'll be all for today.
So regardless of the time of the year, this is kind of an interesting question. When it comes to pre-buying your tickets, do you suggest that, knowing that some point within the year, a price increase is going to happen?
Yeah, so if you know you're going, you're definitely going, and you know that there's a strong likelihood of a price increase, you could save, 3 to 5%, which on a multi-day ticket is, around $15 per person by buying early. And it'll definitely work in January 2017, as long as you've paid for your tickets in full. Once you buy them, they're yours to use.
And when you talk about upgrading tickets, basically when you upgrade a ticket that's an old ticket, because I've done this before, because I may or may not have acquired some comp tickets that have had, price value attached to them in the past, they always just basically give you that ticket value. So say you have a pass that someone only paid $84 for, but the new ticket is $125. Well, you're going to have to pay that difference. They're just going to give you the cash value. They won't give you the new rate, that difference. It'll be the actual cash from what you paid for it to what the actual new ticket costs.
It's dollars, not days.
Correct. It's always the cash value of your ticket.
Yeah.
All right. Well, hopefully that answered your question, Will. Thank you for that reading.
Thank you, Heather, for everything you've done for us.
All right. I'm Satirius Johnson. This is WNYC.
This is my new podcast voice.
No one's done this in the Disney realm yet.
No.
Some people have unintentionally.
So you're just saying there have been boring shows.
Yeah, maybe edit that out. All right. All right. Kevin Geary from, Kevin?
Bryn Mawr.
Kevin Geary from Bryn Mawr, Pennsylvania. Come on now. With the new announcement of the new Star Wars fireworks at the studios this summer, do you think it's something you'll be able to get a Fast Pass Plus for? We're not just talking fireworks. We're talking about fireworks. We're talking projection show, some stage elements. Lynn, do you think there's going to be like a preferred area for that?
That's an interesting question because, you know, from what I've heard, they're getting rid of the preferred fireworks areas at the Magic Kingdom and at Epcot because of low utilization and the fact that there's enough space for everyone. You know, maybe for the first month or so, you might see it. So this is supposed to debut in April, right?
Yeah, I think that's what they're saying. Yeah, in April.
Yeah.
Just so maybe, it has to come a week after I leave or something like that.
And I think you'll see a dessert party for sure because they love those dessert parties.
Yeah. You know, maybe for the first couple weeks, maybe first couple months, but I don't think long-term fast pass and nighttime shows is going to be something you'll see often.
Yeah, I don't know anyone who utilizes that. I mean, really, I've never done it.
I mean, especially for like Illuminations. I mean, there's so many good viewing locations all around World Showcase Lagoon. Why would you do that?
Yeah, exactly. I feel the same way. It's just a waste of fast pass.
The only nighttime experience that I've ever fast passed for is I've used my floating fourth for Fantasmic. You know, after I've used it a couple of times, and then it's like, okay, it's 7 o'clock. There's an 8:30 Fantasmic. There's nothing else that I want to go do, so I'll just use it.
If you need a seat for something, then it makes sense, right? But if it's a standing show,
yeah. If it's Wishes, then you know who cares. Yeah.
Jason from Cincy wants to know what's with the 7 p.m. closings for most of Future World. Is this part of the Shanghai cutbacks that are hitting WDW, or is it to allow more construction on the Soarin' upgrades, or is Epcot now the old man of the U.S. theme parks?
Can we answer yes to all those questions? Yeah. Yes.
That's why I like Epcot, because I'm just grumpy.
You're just the grumpy old man. You're the grumpy old man of the podcast community.
The funny thing is, you know, we keep track of you know, crowds at Epcot, and we had assumed that when Soarin' was going to be closed, we would see a small drop in attendance. But, you know, there was still Test Track, there's still Spaceship Earth, there's still Mission Space, tons of stuff. We've seen like a 25% drop in crowd levels at Epcot. It's you know, way down farther than
we that's insane. Thought it was.
Yeah. I mean a lot more. Now I don't think that's in attendance. I mean it's in wait times. But yeah, it's definitely Soarin' was a huge draw, and that's why I think when the new film comes in, we're going to see the exact opposite happen. We'll see a huge spike in attendance, and it'll bring Epcot back for a while.
So that's average wait times in the park, is that or
yeah, average wait times? Yeah, I mean people.
So could
people
that just be because there's one less ride? Or,
well, you think if there's the same number of people though, they'd be going to the other rides, and
gotcha. That makes sense.
Yeah, no, it's just they're not going.
That's interesting. I mean, Soarin' I always thought was a great attraction, but never
it's the
most reason.
Popular attraction. Most popular attraction in Walt Disney World.
It's never the reason I go. I
mean, got to smell those oranges, man.
So what all closes at 7? All of Future World, or what stays open after 7?
I think so. Mission Space, Test Track are open. Spaceship Earth is open. Whatever's left of Interventions, the three things that are left, are closing at 7. Imagination closes at 7. The rest of the Land Pavilion closes at 7.
Essentially, the attractions that are freestanding. Main attractions.
Yeah, I don't remember whether whether the Seas with Nemo and Friends closes at 7 or not. I'd have to go back and look, but that would be the only thing to be open on that side of the park.
Well, thank you, Lynn. I think we answered more than enough questions today. I appreciate your time, and thanks to him and Touring Plans. And Lynn, how can people connect with you and connect with what you do for your day job, for your time when you're not talking to us
or
Jim or anyone else?
A lot of people. You can find on Touring Plans. I am Len at touringplans.com. I co-authored the unofficial guide. I'm working on the new edition of that, and you can find that on Amazon. It's the unofficial guide to Walt Disney World.
All right, that'll do it for today's show. Thanks to Off Kilter, the greatest band in podcasting, as usual. They're going to be joining us at De Las Puertas coming up on September 30th. Go to DLPFest.com for more information. Tickets are on sale now, and vacation packages for our whole WDW Today weekend are available through our friends at Off to Neverland. And that leads me there to Off to Neverland. As Will likes to say,
all you got to do is pack.
Not just for our event, for anytime you want to travel to Orlando, Florida, not even just Walt Disney World. They're great concierge service. They'll plan your entire days, your itineraries. They get to know you on a personal level. Go to Neverland.com is their domain. And even if you're going to come down, maybe you're even in the area, local area, but you want to maybe get some good rates, been wanting to stay at our three hotels that we have good discounts on. Is there great discounts going on ask them about the WDW Today weekend. It helps even if you just inquire, and hopefully you book for us too. Go to Neverland.com.
And if you're overwhelmed with all these pricing increases and trying to figure out the value versus peak season, Off to Neverland can help you navigate through all the new ticket prices and help you save the most amount of money that you possibly can.
All right. Thank you very much. I'm Logan Seculo.
I'm Will Haynes.
I'm Terry Weaver.
I'm Len Testa.
We'll see you on the next show. Rate and review us on iTunes. Bye-bye.